from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's forum program. Christine Carter joins us in studio for this forum hour, a sociologist and senior fellow at UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and author of Raising Happiness. She's also author of a recently published book on finding high or maximum productivity with minimum stress. It's called The Sweet Spot, How to Find Your Groove at Home and Work. Welcome to Forum. Glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's get this sweet spot down first. I mean, I guess it's what Buster Posey means when he's on a hitting streak or what Kaepernick means when he's passing well. This is when you have the greatest strength and really the greatest amount of ease, when you're in the zone, when you're in the flow. There are many ways of describing it. It's Zen in the art of archery or Zen in the art of motorcycle maintenance. I don't know which. But really, you're talking about passion and purpose and something that a lot of people would like to find, that sweet spot, but have a difficult time navigating to.
Yeah, I'm talking about passion and purpose, but also in that area where we have the least resistance or the least stress. I think that we often forget that piece of things in today's day and age. You know, we can get hits, but we don't get hits in those places where we're not doing damage to our bodies through stress or where we have ease.
Because we're overextended and we're trying too much to multitask and thinking that the busier you are, maybe the more productive you are.
Yeah, we definitely in this culture equate busyness with productivity and success and significance. We even see it as a mark of character, but that is not the way researchers see it. Researchers see busyness as a sign of overwhelm or cognitive overload, which takes you squarely out of that sweet spot.
So that sweet spot is feeling that all is aligned. And let's get to your story, because it is a story that kind of led you to, although you've been doing this research for a while, it's something I never heard of before, the hospital fantasy. People wind up hoping they will be in a hospital just so that they can relax or, you know, have some downtime and so forth. But you actually were in a hospital.
Yeah, well, I'm glad for you that you've never had a hospital fantasy. I had been, you know, I was very successful at work. I love my career, was in a very good place, was in a great place with my family, but I was very tired. I was exhausted all the time. I caught every virus that I, you know, on every airplane and had a chronic strep throat infection, 9 courses of antibiotics in 18 months. And I did one day find myself just so tired with a high fever and, as it turned out, a kidney infection. And I remember having this moment as I was in the hospital, they were giving me IV antibiotics, wishing that I could spend the night so that I could just sleep and I could justify canceling some of the work that I had the following day.
So from there, was there an epiphany that suddenly, you know, yeah, I have to find my groove and, yeah, get out of this?
Yeah, a massive epiphany, because here I am for a decade studying elite performance and productivity and happiness. And I was clearly not walking the talk. I was happy and successful, but I was so tired. I didn't have the one thing that mattered most in my life, which was my health. I wasn't super, super sick. I was just totally exhausted. So the epiphany was that I knew I already had all the tools to work this out. You know, everybody's advice to me was, well, you're just going to have to give something up. You're just going to have to slow down. You're not going to be able to spend as much time with your kids. You're not going to be able to do as much travel or the things that you love so much about your work. And I just knew in my heart of hearts that that was not right. That was not the answer. Slowing down, giving things up in that grand sense. I had it all and it was all really hard won and I wasn't going to give it up. I was just going to work it out so that I had much greater ease.
Well, it has a lot to do. And by the way, we're talking to Christine Carter, the author of The Sweet Spot, and it has a lot to do ultimately with your priorities, obviously, but it has to do with diverting stress. I mean, I've often thought there's too much stress on stress. It's not necessarily all that deleterious a thing. I mean, no, it can help you. It can,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
be sort of an engine or help the engine, the pistons going and all that sort of thing. But you're talking about making your energy more creative and productive and putting the emphasis more on priorities.
Yeah, well, and finding and putting the emphasis more on the things that inspire you or finding energy from positive emotions rather than just from, you know, putting one foot in front of the other, the daily grind, doing the things you feel like you should be doing, the things you feel like you owe to other people. You know, and we live really in a more is more is better kind of a culture. And for me, I did have to sort of shift my framework around giving things up from seeing that I could have it all. I could have all the things that were bringing me so much joy in my life. And but that I didn't have to be doing everything to bring so much joy to everybody else all the time, too. You know, that I was sacrificing a lot of my own basic needs to fulfill things that were actually not so necessary for me to be doing.
Well, you talk a good deal in the book about mastery and grit and all kinds of concepts like this. But let's get to some of the specifics about what we're talking about here. I mean, gaining efficiency has a good deal to do and being more productive, at least in your book, with, well, for one thing, resting your brain, recesses.
Yeah. Taking recess was a really big thing. We, in our culture, assume that if we are not focused and productive 24/7, we're not doing as much work as we can do. And what I learned intimately, and I wish our culture reflected more, is that our brain is not a computer. It's not meant to be switched on and run multiple apps at the same time and just without any sort of break. It can work incredibly well and, in fact, have the highest power. We can find that sweet spot when we let it cycle naturally. We have these natural energy cycles, and we actually get a lot out of those recesses. It's if we take a break, we get some exercise, we go outside and play, or if we just sit and stare into space, you know, if we just let our mind wander, it's not that nothing is getting done. It's that a whole different area of our brain is switching on. And that part of our brain is responsible for our greatest creative insights.
Well, since we're talking about the brain, excuse me, I was just thinking about the fact that you also talk about running on autopilot, which from your perspective can be good, although it can lead to trouble sometimes too. If you're driving and you're on autopilot, for example, I think you need to be more attentive. But how does that work in your calculus of things?
Well, our brain has a great autopilot system, our habits. And we have learned a lot about the neuroscience of actually creating habits. So when you think about this as, you know, you can kind of write the code for your own habits, you free up a ton of energy to focus on other things. So our ability to focus, our willpower, is a limited resource for us. It's like a muscle. It fatigues by mid-afternoon for most people. And everything else starts to happen instinctually on autopilot with on our habits. So if you can decide ahead of time what is going to run on autopilot, you're freeing up all that willpower, all that focus for more important things.
What about more effective use of technology? Again, you get into this to some extent in the book. We probably over-rely on technology.
Yeah.
So are you talking just about cutting it down or other methods and techniques?
No, I'm talking about using it really strategically rather than kind of being a compulsive responder to all of our devices. Certainly technology is one of the tools that will help us get into that sweet spot in that it brings a lot of ease to our lives. Unless we're checking it really compulsively, our email, our social media, just our messages, all of that creates tension and stress, which is going to pull us out of that sweet spot. So the strategic use of technology is more about deciding, okay, well, I'm going to check my email at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. I'm going to shut my computer off at 9 p.m., making decisions about when and where you will use it so that it doesn't pull you into its grip. It's like a slot machine, right? The researchers call the type of feedback we get from it variable ratio reinforcement. And it is just like a slot machine.
It's a bit addictive, like a slot machine, to be sure. You can achieve more by doing less is really kind of the operation of what you're saying here.
Yeah.
And that's the sweet spot. But I'm wondering also, are there gender differences with respect to this, what you call the sweet spot here?
Well, I'm sure that there are in many ways, in that I think women often feel that there are more things that they should be doing, that they're doing for other people. They're more likely to sacrifice their own needs for the needs of their children or for their workplace. They tend to feel busier, more overwhelmed. If you're feeling overwhelmed and feeling that sense of busy, 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 crazy busyness, you're never going to be in your sweet spot.
You got to say no more often too, don't you?
You have to be well practiced at saying no. Have kind of go-to ways to say no and feel comfortable doing it.
Daily habit routine. Let's talk about that, because you're really talking about saving energy in terms of what you achieve with respect to achieving more by doing less.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I have – people think that this is really crazy of me, but I have mapped out my whole morning routine in 5-minute increments, and I make those decisions one time about what I'm going to do. So that's the first step of getting into any sort of habit or routine where you can do it on autopilot, is to really decide once what you're going to do. So I'm not making decisions usually about, you know, whether or not I'm going to make coffee before or after I shower, or when I'm going to do my exercise, or when I'm going to meditate, or even really what I'm going to wear. All of that happens without using up any sort of decision-making power.
Talking again to the author of The Sweet Spot, and let me get your reflection on the fact that the sweet spot seems to mean in some ways enhancing your ties to others, your relationships. You
Absolutely.
Put a good deal of emphasis on that, human connections, friendships. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of people who feel they're most productive, most efficient, most creative when they're alone, running solo.
Well, I certainly am most productive, most creative myself when I'm alone. I don't actually work collaboratively that often in terms of my writing. But that's sort of too narrow. When we look at the bigger picture of how to live from your sweet spot, it's what are the things that create the most ease and the things that create the greatest strengths. And what we know from hundreds of years of research in sociology and psychology is that the ease, health, longevity, well-being overall is best predicted by our social ties, our connections to other people. Our friendships and our positive relationships create incredible ease for us in that they relieve stress. They tell our nervous system that everything is okay and that we can be creative and innovative. And they create strength for us. We get most of our power, really, from learning from other people, from other people's support, their love.
What do you say to people, though, who say, I know I'm overextended. I know I'm trying to multitask too much, but I get a lot done. And not only that, but I believe in a work ethic. I believe in staying busy. I used to joke when people told me I was too busy when I told myself I was, and say it serves my neurosis. And to some degree, that's true. You know, I came up with a strong emphasis on a work ethic, and well, the idle mind is the devil's playground and all that sort of thing. So you stay busy, and incessantly busy can overwhelm you, but at the same time, it can certainly make you very productive.
Well, what I would say is you're not fulfilling your great potential in doing that. That we know that our brain can function at a higher level when you honor its natural rhythms, when you allow yourself to play, when you allow yourself to exercise, to do things that we don't typically put into the busyness category, right? That if you're just trying to focus all the time, you may be very high functioning and doing very well in your career.
No, but there are people who say, I put aside this time for exercise. I put aside this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's good. I mean, I don't sit around idle either, but I do have, you know, for every about 50 minutes of work that I do, I take 10 or 15 minutes of a break. I might just go outside and throw the ball for my dog. It might look idle, but I know that my unconscious mind is chewing on a problem, that this is the best way to reduce the feelings of tension and stress that come from not giving yourself a break.
What does all this have to do with happiness, this sweet spot? I mean, I know that, you know, there's a lot of joking around about you being a happiness expert and all of that sort of thing. But many people feel they're entitled to the pursuit of happiness. It's right built into the Republic's documents. And there's been a lot of study over there in Berkeley, where you are presently associated, about what makes people happy. It's not pleasure.
No. People conflate happiness and pleasure, or happiness and gratification, and that's not what I'm talking about at all. I think of happiness, or a life that is happy, as one that's full of a lot of different types of positive emotions. So gratitude, or inspiration, or awe, or compassion, or love. And those positive emotions are incredibly functional. So even if you're only interested in being more productive and more successful at work, know that those positive emotions that will lead to what we think of as a happy life, or to greater meaning and fulfillment, will also make you more productive. That our human brains function better. Dan Goleman says that positive emotions lubricate our brain, and we can see how when we are feeling happy, when we feel inspired or a sense of elevation or hope or any other positive emotion, our nervous system changes in a measurable way that can make us more organized. We think more clearly. We can plan for the future. We can control our emotions better. We remember social information better. We can control our impulses. We make better decisions. All these things that we need to be productive and successful happen more easily when we're primed with a positive emotion.
It's funny, when you mentioned Dan Goleman, of course, I think about all that work he's done on emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And he makes it seem, and you do to some extent too, that this is just really, in some ways, finding out your own kind of existential authenticity and working it out in a way that's natural, as opposed to working it out in a way that's laborious.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. A lot of this is about finding your own authentic positive
emotion. That can be hard work, though, in itself.
Yeah.
That's what
well,
I'm struck
it should
by.
Be fun work, though. It's not. None of this is meant to make us more anxious or to feel like we're adding things to our task list, which will make us busier or more overwhelmed, or this isn't things you should do. It's giving you permission to look at what really does bring you joy or inspiration or meaning, particularly social meaning. Where is your value for other people? That's where your sweet spot's going to be.
Well, and you also say it's important. This is sounds like one of my mother's old aphorisms. More important to do the right thing as opposed to trying to do everything right.
Yeah.
You know, we can be compelled by that need to be right or feel that we're doing things that are right, and that can take over our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the other aphorisms is you can be happy or you can be right.
Yeah, but you can be also unhappy if you're wrong.
Well, that's a different kind of happiness, unhappiness probably.
Well, but let's explore this a little more. You really are in saying in conjunction that finding the sweet spot is finding happiness, isn't it?
It's finding a sense of meaning and fulfillment. Really. I think that the word happiness is problematic because of our close association with gratification. And the sweet spot can be very, you know, it can require work to get there. It's not all fun and games in terms of you're not always in your sweet spot. I talk to my children about how this is about learning how to get to your sweet spot, how to find your groove, because you're going to lose it again. Otherwise, you never grow. If you're not losing your sweet spot, if you're not losing that groove, you're not necessarily growing. And so it's all about finding it, losing it, finding it again, losing it. And each time you end up in a slightly higher place. So yes, am I happy in life? Yeah, absolutely. Is this a fulfilling way to live? Yes. Is it always easy? No. In fact, it's rarely always, you know, it's rarely easy in the sense that I'm just laying around hardly doing, just loving my sweet spot, right?
People obviously want to get some advice from you. And Michael tweets, I get distracted by phone calls and emails when I'm trying to create my to-do list. I'm a stress eater, and nothing triggers this better than thinking of everything I should be doing. For example, I sit down to make my to-do list, write down 5 to 10 things, and I get a call that adds to that list, and I need a snack.
I need a snack. And they probably feels paralyzed in the face of that to-do list. So my best advice is to give yourself the time to create that list, but then decide when you're going to do all of those things. One of the things that paralyzes us is the intrusive thoughts of all the things that we have to do. And it's easier to sit down and make a to-do list and think of all the things you have to do and to feel the stress of having so much to do, and because it makes us feel important, than it is to just focus and get to work, right? It's actually a lot harder to single task than we think it's going to be. So the first piece of advice is to tell yourself when you're going to do each of those things, because that's just a brain trick. It will reduce some of the intrusive thoughts when you are trying to focus. And then set yourself up to really focus on just one thing at a time. It is not heroic to multitask. It's actually incredibly inefficient. And it leads to lower quality work in terms of the number of errors that we make that then takes more time to correct those errors.
But you make those decisions about the priorities. I mean, if you're going to have a to-do list, there's no generic to-do list. Like some people would say, oh, I have to put my family first, or I have to put my friends first, or I have to put my job first.
Well, yeah, I definitely recommend you come up with your top five priorities in life, and then you do spend 95% of your time in those priorities. So if you're spending time out of your priorities, that's something that will need to change.
Well, but we keep talking about this word happiness, but in some ways you're talking about sort of rest on the one hand and joy on the other, and those two going together in some kind of synchronicity, aren't you?
Yeah, to the extent that, well, actually, I think that they're kind of two different concepts that can be put together when you're thinking about taking a recess from your focused work, right? That could be rest if that's what you need, or that could be finding something that really brings you joy. But the concept of rest is an interesting one, because we, in our culture, I think, fear rest a little bit as a sign of of not being very productive or not working. You know, if busyness is a mark of character, resting is a mark of probably laziness.
Idleness and indolence. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, you know, this is really just about using your brain to its, you know, optimal performance. And I think what a lot of us do is, or what I certainly used to do, is create a basically jet lag during the day. So we have basic rhythms to our brain. And when we, so, you know, we can focus for a little while and then we see a dip in our energy. And those ultradian dips are things that we can just sort of push ourselves through. We can have a cup of coffee. We can force ourselves to focus a little bit longer. But what we're basically doing is creating a jet lag in us. You know, we all understand that if you travel to a different time zone, you're going to feel a little off your game until your circadian rhythm catches back up. But we also have ultradian rhythms throughout the day. And when we don't honor those ultradian rhythms of being able to focus and then needing to rest and have those dips in our energies and the and that rise in our energy, we basically create a little jet lag within our given day.
Some people, admittedly, though, are more energetic and have a higher energy level than others. I think it may have something to do with, well, who knows, temperament, character, just drive.
Lots of things.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, there's some people who can sustain it. I mean, it may, you know, ultimately you may have to face some kind of reaper in this, but the fact is that there's some people who can sustain a high level of energy to an extraordinary degree, and there's some people who need less sleep. It's been proven as well, so they can eat up more hours, even though there's this kind of bragging about, I'm so busy, I don't sleep, you know.
Yeah, I rarely buy that. The sleep thing. I mean, yeah, it's true. 1-2% of people need less sleep than the rest of us. And that amounts to a lot of people, and probably our highest functioning or most successful people in our culture need less sleep because they do have a little bit of extra time. But for the rest of us, you know, getting our sleep actually helps us perform better. I would say that I have an extremely high level of energy now during the day.
It's coming across.
but it's because I've kind of optimized my life for high energy and for, you know, all these things. Stress is incredibly draining of our energy. So it takes a lot of energy to be stressed out. You end up much more exhausted at the end of the day.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about micro habits, because you put a lot of emphasis on how they save time and create greater efficiency.
Yeah. So having lots of little routines. So I don't ever think about whether or not I'm going to do my little strength training routine in the morning, for example. I will wake up. I do my meditation. I go automatically from my meditation to doing some push-ups and what I call a better than nothing exercise routine. And the micro habit in that is that I didn't ever think or decide what I was going to do when my alarm went off in the morning. And having lots of little decisions already pre-made that run on autopilot frees up energy for me to think about other things and also to just live a life in which I'm doing the things that I know are important and are going to lead to the greatest ease and meaning for me in my life, but not having to always will myself to do it.
Well, you may have assumed that you get some tough questions, and I read an email like this one from Heather, and actually my heart goes out to her. Let me just read it to you. She says, once at a routine physical, my family doctor asked about stress. I told her I was stressed out and had too much to do, including going to school at night, holding a full-time job, and being the primary breadwinner of a family and caring for a stepchild. She told me to let something go. When I next spoke to her, she asked if I had let something go. I told her I stopped going to school. She said, I didn't mean for you to do that. I asked, what was I supposed to do, give up my family or my job? I have a different life now with a new partner and a sick parent and high-stress job. I cannot say no to my mother. I'm the only person she has to care for her. Saying no at work has always been challenging. I don't feel like I can say no to the CEO or other senior management, and they just keep piling on the work. When I have tried to politely push back, I was seen not as a team player and negative, so now I try to keep my mouth shut.
That is very hard.
Those are Gordian knots, but that's humanity and what yeah. many people are facing, isn't it?
And the fact is that life is often very difficult. And a part of being able to find our sweet spot is about learning how to deal with that difficulty in a way that doesn't necessarily create, you know, stress.
When you're a caretaker, like that woman is, and so forth, I mean, it makes it a sweet spot, almost a kind of luxury, really, to even contemplate.
But thinking about what small area of your life can you find that and hold out that, you know, I don't know whether I read it or somebody was telling me the story of their grandmother raising five children and as a single mother, and it was a very difficult life. And she had a tin can hidden in her closet that she saved money so that when all the kids were gone, she could go on a cruise, right? So it was just a daily act of doing something for yourself, while acknowledging that right now life is very difficult and it is a luxury to be able to have a job in which you can find flow every single day or to have a family life which brings you more joy than stress.
You've been listening to a special encore edition of Forum. Our guest was Christine Carter, author of The Sweet Spot, How to Find Your Groove at Home and Work. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Brandon Yu and Maxine Scheffer-Wolf. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Joanne Wallace. Thank you for joining us. Happy holidays. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.